faster and a good deal easier if they take some shortcuts. That these shortcuts happen to be potential felonies that might land them behind bars for a few years doesn't seem to deter the more unscrupulous ones. Meanwhile, the upscale PIs, the ones who work out of a fancy office suite in a high-rent part of town, don't do this kind of work themselves. They simply hire some information broker to do it for them. The guy we'll call Keith Carter was the kind of private eye unencumbered by ethics. It was a typical case of, "Where's he hiding the money?" Or sometimes it's, "Where's she hiding the money?" Sometimes it was a rich lady who wanted to know where her husband had hidden her money, though why a woman with money ever marries a guy without was a riddle Keith Carter wondered about now and then, but had never found a good answer for. In this case, the husband, whose name was Joe Johnson, was the one keeping the money on ice. He was a very smart guy who had started a high-tech company with $10,000 he borrowed from his wife's family and built into a $100 million firm. According to her divorce lawyer, he had done an impressive job of hiding his assets, and the lawyer wanted a complete rundown. Keith figured his starting point would be the Social Security Administration, targeting their files on Johnson, which would be packed with highly useful information for a situation like this. Armed with their info, Keith could pretend to be the target and get the banks, brokerage firms, and offshore institutions to tell him everything. His first phone call was to a local district office, using the same 800 number that any member of the public uses. The number listed in the local phone book. When a clerk came on the line, Keith asked to be connected to someone in claims. Another wait, and then a voice. Now Keith shifted gears. "Hi," he began. "This is Gregory Adams, District Office 329. "Listen, I'm trying to reach a claims adjuster that handles an account number that ends in 6363, and the number I have goes to a fax machine." "That's Mod 2," the man said. He looked up the number and gave it to Keith. Next, he called Mod 2. When May Lin answered, he switched hats and went through the routine about being from the office of the Inspector General and the problem about somebody else having to use his computer. She gave him the information he was looking for and agreed to do whatever she could when he needed help in the future. Analyzing the con. What made this approach effective was the play on the employee's sympathy with the story about someone else using his computer and "my boss is not happy with me." People don't show their emotions at work very often. When they do, it can roll right over someone else's ordinary defenses against social engineering attacks. The emotional ploy of "I'm in trouble, won't you help me?" was all it took to win the day. The attacker could not have been successful in obtaining this information from one of the clerks who handles phone calls from the general public. The kind of attack Keith used only works when the person on the receiving end of the call is someone whose phone number is unavailable to the public, and who therefore has the expectation that anyone calling must be somebody on the inside. Another example of speakeasy security. The elements that helped this attack to work include knowing the phone number to the mod, knowing the terminology they used, numidant, alphadant, and dequi, pretending to be from the office of the Inspector General, which every federal government employee knows as a government-wide investigative agency with broad powers. This gives the attacker an aura of authority. One interesting sidelight. Social engineers seem to know how to make requests so that hardly anyone ever thinks, "Why are you calling me?" Even when, logically, it would have made more sense if the call had gone to some other person in some completely different department. Perhaps it simply offers such a break in the monotony of the daily grind to help the caller that the victim discounts how unusual the call seems. Finally, the attacker in this incident, not satisfied with getting the information just for the case at hand, wanted to establish a contact he could call on regularly. he might otherwise have been able to use a common ploy for the sympathy attack. I spilled coffee on my keyboard. That was no good here, though, because a keyboard can be replaced in a day. Hence, he used the story about somebody else using his computer, which he could reasonably string out for weeks. Yep, I thought he'd have his own computer yesterday, but one came in and another guy pulled some kind of deal and got it instead. So this joker is still showing up in my cubicle. And so on. Poor me, I need help. Works like a charm. Social insecurity. Incredibly, the Social Security Administration has posted a copy of their entire program operations manual on the web, crammed with information that's useful for their people, but also incredibly valuable to social engineers. It contains abbreviations, lingo, and instructions for how to request what you want, as described in this story. Want to learn more inside information about the Social Security Administration? Just search on Google, or enter the following address into your browser, http://policy.ssa.gov/poms.nsf. Unless the agency has already read this story and removed the manual by the time you hear this, you'll find online instructions that even give detailed information on what data an SSA clerk is allowed to give to the law enforcement community. In practical terms, that community includes any social engineer who can convince an SSA clerk that he is from a law enforcement organization. One simple call. One of an attacker's main hurdles is to make his request sound reasonable, something typical of requests that come up in the victim's workday, something that doesn't put the victim out too much. As with a lot of other things in life, making a request sound logical may be a challenge one day, but the next, it may be a piece of cake. Mary H.'s phone call. Date? Time? Monday, November 23rd, 7:49 a.m. Place: Mowersby and Storch Accounting, New York.